You are about to listen to another half-hour episode of Lum and Abner. This is your host, Keith.
And your Retrobot hosts, David and... Well, say your name.
I can't.
Huh, why not?
Nobody ever gave me a name.
Didn't Keith give you a name when he started the podcast with you?
No, he just called me Robot Ghost.
Wow, now that's original.
We had a contest to get listener feedback and name the hosts.
Oh, I see. And that's what the listeners came up with.
No, nobody replied at all. Not even after all these years. I guess nobody cares about me.
Hey, don't start to puddle up on me. You'll rust. Besides, you haven't been on this show for a long time. People have probably forgotten there ever was a contest.
I know it. Let's get the show started. Back to you, Keith.
This is presented by the Retro Radio Podcast, retro-otr.com. Wanted to talk a little bit about today's episode. It is from April the 26th, 1950. Lum needs an author for his literary club. And as you might expect, if you're an avid fan of Lum and Abner and of recent shows that I've had in months past, I forget when I put it on the podcast feed, but in 1942, I think it was, right around the months of December and January, one of the recurring gags was the Golden Era Discussion Club, where the gents tried to elevate the level of ignorance in Pine Ridge. And this half-hour show is kind of a microcosm of what they tried to do in that story arc that kind of faded away. It gets mentioned a time or two since then, but not really gone back to. I don't know if they ever did it in any other runs of the show that covers spans that don't exist anymore. But here we have it back with this half-hour episode. Miss Rowena, you may remember from early on in the half-hour shows, voiced by Vivian Randolph, the same lady who was Mrs. Uppington, Abigail Uppington from Fibber McGee and Molly, makes her appearance. This time, though, she is called Miss Van Cleef. She is still from London, Ohio. And Lum is still kind of sweet on her. So even though there's a name change, it's not really clear why. It's kind of the same Miss Rowena character. And of course, Vivian Randolph does that classic Mrs. Uppington type character voice very well. And Lum tries to impress her, and he brings out a lot of gags from the old Golden Era Club.
Keith.
Well, I think...
Keith, is Uncle Donnie coming back?
That's what I got. I was still kind of waiting.
Well, is he?
I was going to have Donnie Pitchford.
Keith, is Uncle Donnie elected in as president, or is that a lifelong office?
From the National Lum and Abner Society, stop by and read us.
Well, is he?
Hey, I think I see him coming up the what now?
Oh, okay.
Let me see.
It's him, all right.
Me. It's my turn to get the door.
Is not. You did it last time.
Well, I'm doing it now.
Go ahead and open the door, and we'll let him in, and have him step right up to the microphone.
Hi, Uncle Donnie.
Hey, Uncle Donnie. Thanks for visiting. There's the microphone. Why don't you go ahead and... open up those articles and read to us.
Page 5, Chapter 2, Pine Ridge to Hollywood. On the left-hand side of the page, we have another Dreaming Out Loud poster, a tall, thin poster. The text reads, Lum and Abner, the famous radio stars, Dreaming Out Loud, with Francis Langford, Frank Craven, Bobs Watson, Phil Harris. We have images of the young couple, another image which repeats what we saw on the poster on the cover of Francis Langford, Lum, Abner, and Doc Walt. And then we have a nice portrait at the bottom of Lum and Abner with the RKO radio logo at the very lower corner. At the top of the page, under the title, we have cast of characters. Lum, Chester Locke. Abner, Norris Goff. Alice, Francis Langford, Dr. Walter Barnes, Frank Craven, Jimmy, Bob's Watson, Wes Stillman, Irving Bacon, Jessica Spence, Clara Blandick, Dr. Kenneth Barnes, Robert Wilcox, Will Danielson, Donald Briggs, Caleb Weehunt, Robert McKenzie, Peter Atkinson, Phil Harris, Effie Liu, Sheila Sheldon, and Washington, Troy Brown, Jr. Dreaming Out Loud, a Voco production released September 1940, RKO Radio Pictures. Screenplay by Howard J. Green, Barry Trivers, Robert D. Andrews. Produced by Jack Voschen, Sam Coslow. Directed by Harold Young. Dreaming Out Loud opens with Lum and Abner meeting on a Pine Ridge street corner as they make their way to work, walking past the homes and businesses of their neighbors, giving candy to children, saying hello to the folks they have known for a lifetime. The Jot'em Down store sports a variety of sale signs for all seasons that have never been removed. A drummer, Peter Atkinson, slickers the old fellows into signing an order for a case of bath salts and throws in a tidy tape wrapper, which later gives Abner package wrapping fits, before rudely commenting that Pine Ridge is in a rut, then breezily leaving. Lum agrees somewhat about the state of Pine Ridge, foreshadowing the plot by suggesting town improvements such as traffic lights to slow down these racing drivers around town here, and a first aid station to take care of the folks they run over. Old Doc Walt Barnes has an office upstairs. His young son, Dr. Kenneth Barnes, is practicing medicine in Adamstown, 80 miles away. Sweet on the Pine Ridge postmistress, Alice, Ken telephones her to brag on his new mobile medical unit, a vehicle designed for emergency treatment. Alice and her kid brother Jimmy, who, together with his friend Washington, run errands with their toy wagon, are wards of their Aunt Jessica Spence, a wealthy but miserly woman whose affections were rejected many years ago by old Doc Walt. Naturally, she resents Alice's relationship with Doc's son. Jessica's lawyer, Will Danielson, also has an eye for pretty Alice. Wes Stillman, the town drunk, is guided by his young daughter, Effie Liu, who prevents him from spending his money on alcohol. Lum and Abner reward her with the gift of an elegant handkerchief decorated with Little Red Riding Hood design. Little Effie Liu's happiness is short-lived. As she leaves the store, a speeding automobile strikes her down. Witnesses, Jimmy and Washington, realize the car belongs to Aunt Jessica, but promise to keep it a secret. Doc Walt is unable to save Effie Liu. The mobile unit from Adamstown cannot arrive in time. Wes, shattered, vows to bring her killer to justice. The following day, Caleb Weehunt, constable, swears Wes in as deputy, assigning him a patrol car with which to catch reckless drivers. Assisted by Lum and Abner, a search proves fruitless when the unusual fingerprints they discover due to a tip from Uncle Henry Lunsford, who reported a speeding car stopping near his place, turn out to be those of Caleb himself. We pause for a romantic interlude. In the middle of a fishing trip, Alice sings Sam Coslow's song, Dreaming Out Loud, to young Dr. Ken in an attempt to smooth over their romantic difficulties brought on by Aunt Jessie's bitterness. Doc Walt's career nearly ends when he collapses in his office with partial paralysis following a period of extreme overwork. Lum and Abner decide Pine Ridge needs a mobile medical unit. Perhaps such improvements will persuade Ken to move to Pine Ridge permanently. Stingy Aunt Jessica refuses to contribute to the worthy cause. Meanwhile, her nephew Jimmy, bursting with a guilty conscience, admits to Lum and Abner that he saw Aunt Jessie's car strike down Effie Liu. When confronted with this information, Jessica and her lawyer deny the charge and accuse Lum and Abner of attempting to blackmail them. Lum decides to launch a fundraising campaign by sending a plea to every baby Doc Walt has delivered in his long career, requesting they send donations for the mobile unit. Soon, money is pouring in. Meanwhile, Jimmy has become very ill. Against Jessica's will, Alice rushes her brother to the office of Doc Walt, who diagnoses the illness as advanced lobar pneumonia. On page 6, we have two photographs. At the top, the cut line reads, Alice receives a call from Ken, Francis Langford, Tuffy Goff, and Chet Locke. The scene is in the store. Alice is at the old telephone, Lum and Abner are behind the counter. Lum is holding a feather duster. The photograph at bottom, very, very stern-faced, Abner and Lum are speaking to Clara Blandick as Jessica Spence. The cut line reads, Lum and Abner meet Auntie M. Clara Blandick as Jessica Spence. Yes, the same actress who was Auntie M in the classic film The Wizard of Oz just the year before. At the top of page 7, a nice large photograph. Jimmy has a secret. Locke and Goff with Bobs Watson. Photo courtesy of Joe Riddle. And is a very beautiful photograph, as I recall, when we had the original in hand. It depicts Lum at the left of the image, Abner at the right. Jimmy is sitting, his elbows on his knees, his chin in his hands. Lum and Abner are each offering Jimmy an apple. This was posed during the scene when Jimmy was trying to confess that he had seen the car that caused the death of the young girl. This photograph was so clear that you were able to see the flesh portion of the wig that was put on Chet Locke to give him a slightly receding hairline and silver gray hair. You could actually see where that portion of the wig started. Back to the text now. Using Lum, Abner, and Alice as his hands, Doc Walt devises makeshift equipment for administering oxygen to Jimmy. While searching for tubing needed for the oxygen, Lum and Abner turn to the engine of Aunt Jessie's car, in which they discover the tattered remnants of Effie Lou's Red Riding Hood hanky. After Jimmy is successfully pulled through the crisis, Lum and Abner present the evidence to Wes, who arrests Will Danielson, who accidentally admits he had driven the car the night Effie Lou was killed. Ken, arriving in town, finds his father sitting in his wheelchair by the window where he had retired for a catnap after the struggle to save Jimmy's life. He discovers to his sadness that his father has passed away. Lum delivers a touching eulogy at Dr. Barnes' funeral.
Friends, we're gathered here to lay to rest one of our neighbors. I ain't going to try to give a sermon about Dr. Walter Barnes. You can't give a sermon about a man that lived a sermon all his life. He was just a plain man that lived and gave his life to just plain folks here in Pine Ridge. I guess all I can say and all you can say in praise of a man like that is that he loved the world and left it better than he found it. Me and Abner tried to find some monument that would show how we all felt about Dr. Walt. Nothing we could buy or nothing we could build would be enough. Dr. Walt left his own monument.
As a fitting monument, Doc's office sign is placed by the grave. Dr. Walter Barnes, office upstairs. Dreaming Out Loud ends as it began. Lum and Abner meet on their walk to work, only to discover a sleek new mobile unit has been delivered, thanks to the final generous contribution of a reformed Aunt Jessica, who will now no doubt approve of her niece's engagement to Kenneth Barnes. Article by Donnie Pitchford. Below this advertisement, visit the Lum and Abner Museum and Jot 'em Down store. Open March through November, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sunday, and by appointment. Located on Lum and Abner Highway 88. Lon and Kathy Stucker, phone 501-326-4442. Post Office Box 38, Pine Ridge, Arkansas, 71966. Tour buses welcome. Y'all drive careful.
I liked that one. Wasn't that from the Jot 'em Down Journal of February 1985?
Yes. Can you read another one?
Chapter 3, a review. Hardcore fans will probably dislike the changes made in the characters and settings of this film, although we were prepared by the preceding radio series. The store is given an upper story, a post office, a postmistress, played by Frances Langford, who appeared on Lum and Abner's Friday Night Sociable in 1933, and a new doctor. Doc Miller is mentioned as practicing in Odin. We catch a brief glimpse of Mose Moots, but Caleb Wehunt is employed as a constable rather than a blacksmith. Other familiar characters are only mentioned. Grandpa Masters, Widder Abernathy, Grandpappy Spears, Cedric, Uncle Henry Lunsford, spelled differently in another source. It's spelled either L-U-N-S-F-O-R-D or L-U-N-C-E-F-O-R-D. Both spellings have been seen. Back to the text. Mamie Seastrunk and M.K. Skimp. The music is quite effective. The opening titles begin with a faithful organ rendition of the radio theme Eleanor, which blends into a bouncy arrangement of the title song. The opening sunrise shot of Pine Ridge is perfectly matched musically, as is the enjoyable scene of Lum and Abner walking to work.
Good morning, Abner.
Morning, Lum.
We hear another hint of Eleanor once in the film, and the familiar organ version closes the film, again followed by Dreaming Out Loud, which accompanies the cast credits. If the viewer has already developed a mental picture of Lum and Abner, seeing them on film may be jarring. We were prepared somewhat by descriptive dialogue on radio, but there seems to be a mutual awkwardness between actors and audience. Lum and Abner are clearly being portrayed by two men in their 30s in old age makeup, striving to act like older men. Their makeup and physical acting improve with each film, however. Locke, Goff, and their producers must be praised for maintaining the characters of Lum and Abner in fine form. Their warmth comes through in scenes of kindness, giving the widow an order of groceries, letting Effie Lou have a pretty hanky, and compassion, consoling Wes upon Effie Lou's death, comforting a depressed Alice extremely well. While this may be the most lavishly produced Lum and Abner film, I do not hold it as my favorite, since it is not really pure Lum and Abner, due to the inclusion of an involved romantic subplot featuring new characters. But I believe I speak for all the NLAS officers in rating it as good entertainment. Article written by Donnie Pitchford. At the bottom, just a bit less than a half-page photo showing Lum and Abner in the Jot 'em Down store, and it's much larger than the real store, which was run by Dick Huddleston. The cut line reads, Lum and Abner in their spacious Jot'em Down store movie set. Photo courtesy of Mr. Joe Riddle.
Those were some nice articles, Uncle Donny. Thanks for stopping by to read to us.
Well, thank you very much, Uncle Donny Pitchford. And for folks who want to find out more about the National Lum and Abner Society, visit lumandabnersociety.org, and you will find out all there is to know there. Also, check out the Facebook groups, facebook.com, and do a search for Lum and Abner comic book and Lum and Abner radio show. There's lots of fans there who just would love to talk to you about Lum and Abner. Well, let's go ahead and get busy listening to this show. So take it away, Retrobots.
From April 26, 1950, Lum needs an offer for this literary club.
The Lum and Abner Show. With your old friend Daisy Finch, Cliff Arquette, Isabel Randolph, Herb Vigran, music by Opie Cates and starring Lum and Abner.
Welcome back, everyone, for another visit to Pine Ridge and the 30-Minute Lum and Abner episodes. This is your host, Keith, and this is the Retro Radio Podcast. We will have Donnie Pitchford here in a little bit to read us some more from the annals of the Jot'em Down Journals.
In today's episode, Lum needs an author for his literary club meeting from April 26, 1950.
But first, I wanted to take a few moments to talk about the show a little bit today. It has to do with Lum trying to find an author to speak at his literary club. I don't think they've mentioned the literary club in the half-hour shows. In the 50-minute shows, it was known as the Golden Era Discussion Club, trying to raise the level of ignorance in Pine Ridge. It didn't last really long. It would just span right around the Christmas months, going from 1942 to early 43, and it kind of faded away. It may have been mentioned a couple times since then, but almost not really that much. But here we find a resurrection of that discussion club. Only this one. There is no such club. Lum is just trying to impress a lady who he kind of admires, which, if I'm not mistaken, it is played by Lillian Randolph.
Keith, you are mistaken. It's Vivian Randolph.
Who earlier on in this series was it Rowena, cousin Rowena, that was actually cousin to
Jimmy Lunsford.
To, name escaped me, somebody in town.
Somebody in town. It wouldn't be one of those Barton boys, would it?
No, I think it was old Henry Lunsford.
Yes, somebody in town, that one. But this is, the character seems to be the same character, because she's from London, Ohio, but it's, she has a different name, Van Cleef, I think is her last name on this one, Miss Van Cleef. So maybe it is the same person, maybe she went off and got married, but that doesn't make sense, because Lum has a thing for her. Anyway, it's Olive Fudd, it's Pine Ridge, they rehash things, they move characters around. But it's all about the Lum trying to make a good impression and trying to resurrect the old discussion club by having this literary club. Of course, along the way, the usual cast of characters move in and out with their typical zaniness to frustrate good old Lum. And hey, this is just in time. Here comes Donnie Pitchford now.
It's him. Uncle Donnie.
I got the door.
I love how you're always on time, Uncle Donnie. Why don't you go ahead and step up to the mic and read us that article you have.
Page 5, Chapter 2, Pine Ridge to Hollywood. On the left-hand side of the page, we have another Dreaming Out Loud poster, a tall, thin poster. The text reads, Lum and Abner, the famous radio stars, Dreaming Out Loud, with Francis Langford, Frank Craven, Bob Watson, Phil Harris. We have images of the young couple, another image which repeats what we saw on the poster on the cover of Francis Langford, Lum, Abner, and Doc Walt. And then we have a nice portrait at the bottom of Lum and Abner with the RKO radio logo at the very lower corner. At the top of the page, under the title, we have cast of characters. Lum, Chester Locke. Abner, Norris Goff. Alice, Francis Langford. Dr. Walter Barnes, Frank Craven. Jimmy, Bob's Watson, Wes Stillman, Irving Bacon, Jessica Spence, Clara Blandick, Dr. Kenneth Barnes, Robert Wilcox, Will Danielson, Donald Briggs, Caleb Weehunt, Robert McKenzie, Peter Atkinson, Phil Harris, Effie Liu, Sheila Sheldon, and Washington, Troy Brown Jr. Dreaming Out Loud, a Voco production released September 1940, RKO Radio Pictures. Screenplay by Howard J. Green, Barry Trivers, Robert D. Andrews. Produced by Jack Voschen, Sam Coslow. directed by Harold Young. Dreaming Out Loud opens with Lum and Abner meeting on a Pine Ridge street corner as they make their way to work, walking past the homes and businesses of their neighbors, giving candy to children, saying hello to the folks they have known for a lifetime. The Jot 'em Down store sports a variety of sale signs for all seasons that have never been removed. A drummer, Peter Atkinson, slickers the old fellows into signing an order for a case of bath salts and throws in a tidy tape wrapper, which later gives Abner package wrapping fits, before rudely commenting that Pine Ridge is in a rut, then breezily leaving. Lum agrees somewhat about the state of Pine Ridge, foreshadowing the plot by suggesting town improvements such as traffic lights to slow down these racing drivers around town here, and a first aid station to take care of the folks they run over. Old Doc Walt Barnes has an office upstairs. His young son, Dr. Kenneth Barnes, is practicing medicine in Adamstown, 80 miles away. Sweet on the Pine Ridge postmistress, Alice, Ken telephones her to brag on his new mobile medical unit, a vehicle designed for emergency treatment. Alice and her kid brother Jimmy, who, together with his friend Washington, run errands with their toy wagon, are wards of their Aunt Jessica Spence, a wealthy but miserly woman whose affections were rejected many years ago by old Doc Walt. Naturally, she resents Alice's relationship with Doc's son. Jessica's lawyer, Will Danielson, also has an eye for pretty Alice. Wes Stillman, the town drunk, is guided by his young daughter, Effie Lou, who prevents him from spending his money on alcohol. Lum and Abner reward her with the gift of an elegant handkerchief decorated with Little Red Riding Hood design. Little Effie Lou's happiness is short-lived. As she leaves the store, a speeding automobile strikes her down. Witnesses, Jimmy and Washington, realize the car belongs to Aunt Jessica, but promise to keep it a secret. Doc Walt is unable to save Effie Lou. The mobile unit from Adamstown cannot arrive in time. Wes, shattered, vows to bring her killer to justice. The following day, Caleb Wehunt, constable, swears Wes in as deputy, assigning him a patrol car with which to catch reckless drivers. Assisted by Lum and Abner, a search proves fruitless when the unusual fingerprints they discover due to a tip from Uncle Henry Lunsford, who reported a speeding car stopping near his place, turn out to be those of Caleb himself. We pause for a romantic interlude. In the middle of a fishing trip, Alice sings Sam Coslow's song, Dreaming Out Loud, to young Dr. Ken in an attempt to smooth over their romantic difficulties brought on by Aunt Jessie's bitterness. Doc Walt's career nearly ends when he collapses in his office with partial paralysis following a period of extreme overwork. Lum and Abner decide Pine Ridge needs a mobile medical unit. Perhaps such improvements will persuade Ken to move to Pine Ridge permanently. Stingy Aunt Jessica refuses to contribute to the worthy cause. Meanwhile, her nephew Jimmy, bursting with a guilty conscience, admits to Lum and Abner that he saw Aunt Jessie's car strike down Effie Lou. When confronted with this information, Jessica and her lawyer deny the charge and accuse Lum and Abner of attempting to blackmail them. Lum decides to launch a fundraising campaign by sending a plea to every baby Doc Walt has delivered in his long career, requesting they send donations for the mobile unit. Soon, money is pouring in. Meanwhile, Jimmy has become very ill. Against Jessica's will, Alice rushes her brother to the office of Doc Walt, who diagnoses the illness as advanced lobar pneumonia. On page 6, we have two photographs. At the top, the cut line reads, Alice receives a call from Ken, Francis Langford, Tuffy Goff, and Chet Locke. The scene is in the store. Alice is at the old telephone. Lum and Abner are behind the counter. Lum is holding a feather duster. The photograph at bottom, very, very stern-faced, Abner and Lum are speaking to Clara Blandick as Jessica Spence. The cut line reads, Lum and Abner meet Auntie M. Clara Blandick as Jessica Spence. Yes, the same actress who was Auntie M in the classic film The Wizard of Oz just the year before. At the top of page 7, a nice large photograph. Jimmy has a secret. Locke and Goff with Bob's Watson. Photo courtesy of Joe Riddle, and is a very beautiful photograph, as I recall, when we had the original in hand. It depicts Lum at the left of the image, Abner at the right. Jimmy is sitting, his elbows on his knees, his chin in his hands. Lum and Abner are each offering Jimmy an apple. This was posed during the scene when Jimmy was trying to confess that he had seen the car that caused the death of the young girl. This photograph was so clear that you were able to see the flesh portion of the wig that was put on Chet Locke to give him a slightly receding hairline and silver gray hair. You could actually see where that portion of the wig started. Back to the text now. Using Lum, Abner, and Alice as his hands, Doc Walt devises makeshift equipment for administering oxygen to Jimmy. While searching for tubing needed for the oxygen, Lum and Abner turn to the engine of Aunt Jessie's car, in which they discover the tattered remnants of Effie Lou's Red Riding Hood hanky. After Jimmy is successfully pulled through the crisis, Lum and Abner present the evidence to Wes, who arrests Will Danielson, who accidentally admits he had driven the car the night Effie Lou was killed. Ken, arriving in town, finds his father sitting in his wheelchair by the window where he had retired for a cat nap after the struggle to save Jimmy's life. He discovers to his sadness that his father has passed away. Lum delivers a touching eulogy at Dr. Barnes' funeral.
Friends, we're gathered here to lay to rest one of our neighbors. I ain't going to try to give a sermon about Dr. Walter Barnes. You can't give a sermon about a man that lived a sermon all his life. He was just a plain man that lived and gave his life to just plain folks here in Pine Ridge. I guess all I can say, and all you can say in praise of a man like that, is that he loved the world and left it better than he found it. Me and Abner tried to find some monument that would show how we all felt about Dr. Walt. Nothing we could buy or nothing we could build would be enough. Dr. Walt left his own monument.
As a fitting monument, Doc's office sign is placed by the grave. Dr. Walter Barnes, office upstairs. Dreaming Out Loud ends as it began. Lum and Abner meet on their walk to work, only to discover a sleek new mobile unit has been delivered, thanks to the final generous contribution of a reformed Aunt Jessica, who will now no doubt approve of her niece's engagement to Kenneth Barnes. Article by Donnie Pitchford. Below this advertisement, visit the Lum and Abner Museum and Jot 'em Down store, open March through November. 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sunday, and by appointment. Located on Lum and Abner Highway 88. Lon and Kathy Stucker, phone 501-326-4442, Post Office Box 38, Pine Ridge, Arkansas 71966. Tour buses welcome. Y'all drive careful. Chapter 3, A Review. Hardcore fans will probably dislike the changes made in the characters and settings of this film, although we were prepared by the preceding radio series. The store is given an upper story, a post office, a postmistress, played by Frances Langford, who appeared on Lum and Abner's Friday Night Sociable in 1933, and a new doctor. Doc Miller is mentioned as practicing in Odin. We catch a brief glimpse of Moe's Moots, but Caleb Wehunt is employed as a constable rather than a blacksmith. Other familiar characters are only mentioned. Grandpa Masters, Widder Abernathy, Grandpappy Spears, Cedric, Uncle Henry Lunsford, spelled differently in another source. It's spelled either L-U-N-S-F-O-R-D or L-U-N-C-E-F-O-R-D. Both spellings have been seen. Back to the text. Mamie Seastrunk and M.K. Skimp. The music is quite effective. The opening titles begin with a faithful organ rendition of the radio theme Eleanor, which blends into a bouncy arrangement of the title song. opening sunrise shot of Pine Ridge is perfectly matched musically, as is the enjoyable scene of Lum and Abner walking to work.
Good morning, Abner.
Morning, Lum.
We hear another hint of Eleanor once in the film, and the familiar organ version closes the film, again followed by Dreaming Out Loud, which accompanies the cast credits. If the viewer has already developed a mental picture of Lum and Abner, seeing them on film may be jarring. We were prepared somewhat by descriptive dialogue on radio, but there seems to be a mutual awkwardness between actors and audience. Lum and Abner are clearly being portrayed by two men in their 30s in old-age makeup, striving to act like older men. Their makeup and physical acting improve with each film, however. Locke, Goff, and their producers must be praised for maintaining the characters of Lum and Abner in fine form. Their warmth comes through in scenes of kindness, giving the widow an order of groceries, letting Effie Lou have a pretty hanky, and compassion, consoling Wes upon Effie Lou's death, comforting a depressed Alice extremely well. While this may be the most lavishly produced Lum and Abner film, I do not hold it as my favorite, since it is not really pure Lum and Abner, due to the inclusion of an involved romantic subplot featuring new characters. But I believe I speak for all the NLAS officers in rating it as good entertainment. Article written by Donnie Pitchford. At the bottom, just a bit less than a half-page photo showing Lum and Abner in the Jot 'em Down store, and it's much larger than the real store, which was run by Dick Huddleston. The cut line reads, Lum and Abner in their spacious Jot 'em Down store movie set. Photo courtesy of Mr. Joe Riddle.
All right. Thank you for that, Uncle Donnie. It's always good to hear you read those old articles.
Goodbye, Uncle Donnie. See you next time.
And with all that said, it's time to present today's show. So take it away, RetroBots.
Lum needs an author for his literary club meeting, April 26th, 1950.
Come here, Abner. I need your help.
Again?
Do you know where I can find an author?
An author?
Yeah, a fellow that writes books.
Oh!
I've got to dig one up, but tonight.
Well, how about Longfeller?
Longfeller?
Yeah, as long as you're going all the bother to dig one up, you might as well pick a good
one. I ain't got time for no smart remarks.
That was a dandy, weren't it?
This is important. That new woman in town that's staying over to the boarding house, Miss Lydia Van Cleaver, she wants to meet a big author.
Well, why do you have to find one for her to meet?
Well, somehow or other, she's got the idea that I'm a personal friend of all the famous authors.
Where did she ever get an idea like that?
From me.
Lum, when are you going to learn to keep your big fat mouth shut?
Well, Admiral, I had to be polite and keep the conversation rolling.
Well, it's all right to keep it rolling. You don't have to pick it up and run clean out of bounds with it.
Anyway, I've got to get hold of some author before the big meeting tonight.
Now, just a minute. Rack them up and break again. What big meeting?
Well, somehow or other, Miss Van Cleaver got the idea that we had a big literary club here in Pine Ridge, and I don't know. She sort of thinks I'm president of it.
You sure had that conversation rolling, didn't you, sonny boy?
Abner, she forced me into saying them things. And now I've got to go through with it.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Now, where in the world do you start looking for an author?
Lum, why don't you give up this silly idea before you get yourself in worse trouble than you are right now?
Abner, I know what I'm doing. This is my big chance to make a hit with Miss Van Cleaver. You see, I found out she's taken up writing.
Well, that's nice. I think everybody ought to learn how to write. Even her age. nice to know how to print your name and stuff like that.
No, I mean, she's taken up writing books and poems and all that literary junk.
Oh?
And the reason she's in Pine Ridge is because she's here getting color.
What color she want to get?
I mean, she's trying to get herself a wider background.
Well, I'd say she's got a fairly good start.
Anyway, all I have to do now is convince her that I'm a big literary man myself. Who knows? Maybe someday me and her... Well, you know what happened to Robert and Elizabeth Browning.
No. What happened? I ain't had a chance to read a paper all day.
Well, I mean, they was both literaries, poets. They worked together and developed a beautiful friendship.
Well...
And then they got married.
Ruined the whole thing, huh?
No, of course not. I can see you're going to be a shining light at the literary club meeting tonight.
Me? Now, wait a minute. I ain't going to that thing, Lum. I wouldn't know what to do at it.
Abner, all you got to do is just sit there and discuss famous books and writers.
I don't know none of that junk.
Yes, you do. You've heard of David Copperfield, ain't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I've heard of him. I can't recollect what he wrote, though.
Such ignorance. He wrote Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Well, I ought to know that. What is the matter with me, anyway?
I think what you better do is get all the classics and read up on them twixt now and tonight.
All right.
In the meantime, I'll track down an author. What I'd like to get is some famous writer like Ernest Hemingway or George Bernard Shaw or Gypsy Rose Lee.
Say, Lom, how many of them classics is it?
Oh, I think there must be six or seven of them.
Seven?
Yeah.
Well, I know I can't read more than five of them by tonight. But don't you worry, old boy. I'll bluff my way through the other two.
Good. Well, howdy, Opie.
Hello.
Tell me, Opie, when you lived in Clinton, did you know any writers over there?
Writers? You don't mean the Ritters, do you? Lyle and Clyde Ritter?
Oh. No, not Ritter, Writer.
No, Lump, they pronounced it Ritter. How'd you happen to know them?
Look, Opie, I'm talking about fellas that write books.
Oh, no, you're all mixed up, Lump. Lyle is a J.C. Penney man, and Clyde is a one-man band.
Well, that's nice, but what I'm...
Well, actually, Clyde ain't a one-man band no more. He had to give it up on account of union trouble.
Well, that is a shame, but what I'm...
You see, Clyde played the harmonica, concertina, tambourine, triangle, woodblocks, and both sides of the bass drum.
Sounds uncommonly tough.
But when he got into Missouri, the Kansas City local, they insisted that he put in two fiddles.
Look, Opie, I'm sorry Clyde's got troubles, but I've got troubles, too. So I wish you'd run along now, because I've got to make some more phone calls.
Oh, yes, sir.
Let's see. Believe I'll try Earl Pomeroy. He might know some author I could get. I know his uncle's a member of the Book of the Month Club. Oh, hello, Earl. This is Lum. I was wondering if you was personal acquainted with any authors.
Clyde married one of the Bidball sisters.
Just a minute, Earl. Dad, blame it, Opie. I can't hear nothing. Go back in the feed room. Abner's back there reading some literary books. Get him to read them out loud to you, and then you can come to the literary club meeting tonight, too.
All right, I'll do that.
Now, what did you say, Earl?
Oh, say, Lum.
Wait, Earl. What is it, Opie?
The next time I write to Clyde, I'll tell him you asked about him.
Yeah, do that by all means. Now, just go through that door there and listen to Abner read high-class literature.
Yes, sir. Oh, see, Ned. Ned throws the ball to Tom. Tom throws the ball to Ned. Will Ned catch the ball? Oh, see, the dog. Ned missed it, huh? Doggies, I've never seen you standing there, Opie. Well, Lum told me to come in here and have you literary me up for that club. Oh, he did, huh? All right, doggies, Opie, I'm getting sick and tired of that dad-blamed Lum trying to run everybody's lives. That farmer asked me to do one more thing for him. I'm going to take that baseball bat.
Hey, Abner. I can't get Cliff Arquette on the phone. I wish you'd run over to his place and ask him if he can get me a book writer, Summers.
Now, listen here, Lawmater.
And hurry up.
Yes, sir. Abner, you was going to take the baseball bat and what? And knock the ball to men. I'll see you later.
Come in, Abner.
Yeah, howdy, Cliff. Say, Lom wants to know if you know where he's...
Abner, I just as leave you didn't bother me right now.
For the land's sakes, what's the matter with you, Cliff?
Oh, it ain't me. It's that poor old C.L. Potter.
Who's C.L. Potter?
I don't know.
Ah.
Look, here's his picture in the paper. Oh, I tell you, Abner, there's the face of a man that suffered.
Well, Cliff, this is just an advertisement for some kind of nerve pill.
Abner, a man can suffer just as good in an advertisement as anywhere. Now, go ahead and read it. I just want you to see what's going on in this troubled world of ours.
All right. C.L. Potter of 231 6th Street, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, writes. Well, everybody's taking that up now. First, Miss Van Cleaver, now Mr. Potter.
Go on, Abner.
I suffered with insomnia and could not get any sleep for 8 months.
Bad enough having insomnia, but this kid couldn't get any sleep on top of it.
I became run down and so irritable that I lost all my friends.
Oh, that poor varmint. He's got no friends. He's all alone in Cedar Rapids, Iowa yet.
I got behind in my work at the office and was fired. Oh, Miss Cliff, this is sad.
I can hardly stand it.
I could not pay my bill, and they shut off the gas and water.
Mm.
Oh, that poor varmint. Bless his heart. Bless his heart.
Go on, Abner. You ain't got to the saddest part yet.
Then I heard about Dr. Vanker's new quick-action polarized nerve pills. And I immediately purchased the large economy-sized container.
Yeah, that's it. That's the sad part.
Well, Cliff, he's got all them pills now. He's going to be all right.
No, he ain't. They shut off the water at his place, and without water, how's he going to swallow the pills?
Yeah, they turned off the gas, too. Poor critter can't even commit suicide.
No, I tell you, Abner, there's the saddest... Wait, I believe that was my ring.
Yeah, better not answer it. More like they're just more bad news.
Mm. Hello.
Hello, Cliff. This is Lum. Did Abner ask you about getting me an author?
Get you what? Can't hardly hear you.
Author.
Arthur who?
I mean, do you know anybody like Hemingway?
Oh, sure. I know Hemingway good. He's up at the county seat now.
He is?
Yeah.
Granny, Cliff, you don't reckon you could get him to come to Pine Ridge to meet Miss Van Cleaver tonight, do you?
Well, sure, I'll be glad to.
Oh, that's wonderful, Cliff. Get on it right away.
All right, Lum. What do you suppose Lum wants Miss Van Cleaver to meet him for?
Who?
Joe Hemingway, the new plumber at the county seat.
Now here's Opie Cates, his clarinet and his orchestra, and the Muskrat Ramble.
Thank you.
my goodness. Look, Abner, it's 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
The guests will be arriving any minute now. Is everything all set? Got the refreshments?
Yeah.
I hope you got something that'll appeal to a high-class name like Lydia Van Cleaver.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's a Britishman.
She is. Well, I got just the thing, you know. We're going to have crumpets and meatballs.
Good. Let's see now. Did you get a bunch of books to strew around the room, make it look like we're heavy readers?
Well, I rounded up all I could get. I got Lorna Doone and the 1934 Almanac and Gilbert the Boy Trapper.
That's right.
Love Twixt Golden Strands, Murphy Seed Catalog, Animal Heroes Every Boy Should Know, and Banjo Playing Made Easy.
That ought to give Miss Van Cleaver a rough idea of what kind of brains we got around this town.
Oh, that'll store, boy.
Granny, I bound you, that's her.
Yeah, more like it. Straight
come up. In.
Thank you.
Oh, it's you, Miss Fish.
Yes, I'm back with the County Home Economics Bureau, and
well,
I
ain't got time for no homemaker's demonstration.
Are you bothered by pests?
Yes, I sure am. Goodbye, Miss Pitt.
The county has developed a new low-cost gopher biscuit.
Well, the gophers are just going to have to get along on what they can find around the place. I ain't going to buy no special biscuits for them.
Well, the county has also developed a new pest control spray, which is effective on moths, silverfish, slugs, bugs, and relatives. Oh, no, I mean, and related insects.
Is there a difference?
You might have something there, kiddo.
Look, Miss Pitts, I'm expecting a lot of literary people here tonight.
The county has authorized me to give you a free demonstration. I will now spray your cupboards and closets.
No, not tonight, you won't.
First, we take the spray gun thus and hold this end up. So, oh no, we hold this end up. Oh, dear, I never know which end is up.
Well, I don't know which end is up, but I know which way is out. Right through this door. Good night.
You know, I bought some of them gopher biscuits. I might have liked them, huh?
Talk about needing pest control. Dad, blame it. Why don't she stay away? No, I don't want no gopher biscuits.
Well, I don't care a whole lot for them myself.
Oh, it's you, Opie. I thought you was Miss Pitt.
Well, thank you.
Say, you didn't see Miss Van Cleaver on your way over here, did you?
No, but I saw Cliff Arquette heading over this way with some stranger.
Granny, that must be Hemingway. Cliff must have got my author all right, Abner. Oh, what a night this is going to be.
Author? Lom, this Hemingway you're getting is...
Just imagine what a literary engagement this will be.
Engagement?
Lydia Van Cleaver, Hemingway, and me.
Well, congratulations, Lom. I hope you three will be very happy.
I just hope that nobody throws a wrench into the works tonight.
You better keep an eye on that Hemingway, then.
Ready? There they are. Come in.
Good evening, Lom. I want you fellas to meet my friend here.
Yeah, sure. Bring him right in.
Lom? Shake hands with Mr. Hemingway.
Mr. Hemingway, it is with deep respect and great humiliation that I welcome such a renowned and notorious celebrity into my humble but literary home.
Likewise, I am sure.
Lom, this fellow here...
Hey, shut up, Abner. Yes, sir, Mr. Hemingway, we are all admired your work something wonderful.
Gee, thanks. It's all guaranteed, too.
What are you working on right now, Mr. Hemingway?
Well, I'm real glad you asked that. It's quite an interesting problem. Now try to visualize this picture. Here's this little cottage. Just the ordinary place, see?
Uh-huh.
Now the bathtub is in the front part of the house, and the hot water boiler is in the kitchen.
I like the way you get that realism into your words.
Thank you. Now, this little family is sitting in the dining room eating supper when the boiler explodes and blows them right out of the house.
Yeah, that's an exciting beginning, I'll say that. Who's the leading character?
Oh, the old man. Yeah, he was blew a good block and a half further than the rest of them. Now then, Now then, my problem.
Now wait, don't tell any more. Wait till Miss Van Cleaver gets here. I want her to hear this.
Lom,
hush up, Abner. Yes, sir, Mr. Hemingway, you're going to enjoy meeting Miss Van Cleaver. You know, she's just starting out in the business, and maybe you can give her some good pointers.
Well, I shall be happy indeed to do all that I can. It ain't often you run into a lady plumber.
No, it ain't. You see, she...
Lady plumber? Yeah, if she gets good enough, maybe I can throw some business her way. I got more plumbing jobs than I can handle.
Wait a minute. What's this about plumbing jobs?
Yeah, and I'm mighty glad for this opportunity to come to this meeting tonight and make some new contacts. Here's a stack of me cards. Maybe it'll pass them around a little. Joe Hemingway, scientific plumber. Day or night call.
Oh, my goodness, this is terrible, Abner. Call up Miss Van Cleaver and tell her the meeting's off.
Well, Lum, I don't... Oh, wait, Miss, too late. There she is.
Oh, me, this will wash me up with her for good. Look, fellas, all we can do now is just try to bluff it through and keep Hemingway quiet. Yeah, come in. Good evening, Miss Van Cleaver.
Well, how do you do? I'm sorry I'm late, but there was some trouble with the hot water pipes at the boarding house. And
oh, the hot... Oh, well, say, I'll just go right over
yeah,
there right
sure,
now.
Fine, yeah. Now, let's get the meeting started, shall we?
Oh, but Mr. Edwards, I haven't met your guest, Mr. Hemingway.
Miss Van Cleaver, Mr. Hemingway. Now then, we'll
get... I'm so thrilled to meet you, Mr. Hemingway.
Likewise, I am sure. Are you local here?
Oh, good gracious, no. I'm from London, Ohio.
Well, come on, let's get the...
What are you working on currently, Mr. Hemingway?
Oh, well, I'm real glad you asked that. I'm currently...
Thank you, Mr. Hemingway. All right, now, let's all take our places. Now, Miss Van Cleaver, you sit here.
Oh, all right, thank you.
And Mr. Hemingway, you sit clean to the back of the room. No, farther back, Mr. Hemingway.
Yeah, but I can't hear nothing from here.
Good. I hope it works both ways.
Yeah, me too.
All right, fellow members, let's all simmer down now.
Hey, Lomp, just a minute. You want me to serve the crumpets and meatballs now?
No.
They're ready.
I know. I'll let you know.
Oh, good. I can't wait to try them.
Fellow members, the 242nd meeting of the Pine Ridge Literary Club will now come to order and carry on our goal of striving for a higher type of ignorance amongst Pine Ridge.
Amen.
We will disperse with the reading of the minutes of the last meeting, inasmuch as we never had one, and get right into a good red-hot discussion.
Long. The meatballs are getting cold.
Our subject for tonight is the high-class writing of Chaucer.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Miss Van Cleaver, if you want to enter into the discussion, just... bust right in.
Oh, well, thank you. But if you don't mind, I'd rather just observe.
Well, suit yourself. You can learn something.
Yeah, this is what I want.
Fellow members, now here's a little background material I looked up on Mr. Chaucer. Got it wrote down here. He was born in 1340 and passed on to his reward in 1400.
Pretty good time.
He wrote several high-class books. There. Now, who would like to lead off the discussion on his writing? Just anybody that wants to can go ahead and start. Anybody?
Well, yes, I would like to say
thank you, Mr. Hemingway. Anybody else? Well, I'll get this thing rolling by throwing a controversial question at you. How do you fellas feel about Chaucer's writing? Well, here, I'll put the question another way. How do you feel about writing in general?
Oh, it's all right, I reckon.
It's okay here.
Well,
I think it's a pretty good idea.
Does anybody wish to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would like to say...
Thank you, Mr. Hemingway. Now, is there any questions about what we've covered so far?
Well, yeah, I got a question.
Ah, good. Now we're getting warmed up. What is your question, Mr. Cage?
What's a Chaucer?
What you pour your coffee in to cool it?
It is not.
It's not one of them flying Chaucers, is it?
Chaucer's the feller we've been discussing for the last hour. He writes books.
Oh. Oh.
Abner, where's the meatball?
Why, they're right back here.
Now then, is there any other question?
Well, yeah, I got another.
Well, good, Mr. Keats.
Is he the same feller that wrote that book about Ned throwing the balls to Tom?
I don't believe he is.
If you'll pardon me for butting in, I can answer that one. He ain't.
Oh, well, thank you for your contribution, Miss Van Cleaver. I believe that clears up that rather moose point. Now then, let's move on to Shakespeare.
I ain't moving no place till we eat them meatballs.
Hey, now wait just a minute. I'd like to say something about Chaucer.
Thank you. That's very interesting.
Now wait a minute. You listen here. I was invited to this discussion meeting. I got a right to discuss.
Yes. And if you'll pardon me for butting in again, I would love to hear what Mr. Hemingway has to say on the subject.
So would I.
Well, it seems rather a shame to have such a distinguished guest and not let him speak.
Well, you see, Miss Van Cleaver, the trouble... Oh, what's the use? Go ahead, Mr. Hemingway.
Thank you.
Oh,
Lord. In rereading Chaucer's Canterbury Tales the other night, I come to the conclusion that his powers of characterization and humor and his perfect realization of the atmosphere of medieval England produced a certain charm and color never since equaled.
Huh?
Now, in my latest book, I have also tried to attain...
Wait a minute. Did you say your latest book?
Yeah, it'll be off the presses in about a month. I shall send you his autographed copy. I shall also send one to you, Mademoiselle Van Meet Cleaver.
Thank you. But you've already given me something more wonderful, Mr. Hemingway. Just meeting you has inspired me to write. In fact, I think I shall run back to my room right now and dash off a sonnet while I'm still under this magic spell.
Ain't you going to wait for the meatball?
Thank you, no. And Mr. Edwards, thank you so much for this charming, electrifying evening. Oh,
we have them like this every week.
Oh. Well, thank you again, and good night, all.
Yeah, good night, Mr. Hemingway.
Well, grannies, Mr. Hemingway, let me shake your hand. You don't know it, but you sure saved the day for me.
Oh, I don't think nothing of it.
I never had no ideas you'd actually wrote a book.
Doggies, me neither. You know, I'd love to have a copy of that myself, Mr. Hemingway. What's the name of it?
Well, it's the 1950 Revised Plumber's Manual.
Lum and Abner will be back in a moment. It's music, music, music on CBS Sunday afternoons. And starting this Sunday, two new music programs make Sunday listening an even greater pleasure on CBS. The Main Street Music Hall returns with today's top songs, sung by Bill Tabbitt of South Pacific fame with Alfredo Antonini's 35-piece orchestra. Also starting this Sunday, Your Invitation to Music will bring you recordings of great singers and great conductors, plus interviews with some of them. This music, music, music will be yours on most of these same CBS stations. Be listening this Sunday afternoon.
journeys. I can't seem to get interested in this plumber's manual.
It never turned out very good, I'll tell you.
I don't care if it is autographed. It just ain't interesting. Where's that other book I was reading?
This one?
Yeah. Let's see. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Right there. Tom throws the ball to Ned. Will Ned catch the ball? Oh, see the dog.
Dog, is that Ned missed it again?
The Love and After Show is written by Roz Rogers and Betty Boyle, directed by Larry Burns, with the music of Opie Tate. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lum and Abner's last show for the season. We'd like to thank you very much for being with us. Have a good summer. We'll see you next fall. This is Wendell Niles saying goodnight. The CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.